Awesome. Hooray, hurrah. Once again, the smartest man in the world, Poopcast, takes to the ether, this time from the salubrious confines of the Porpoise of Fruititude, located somewhere in eager, lower California. Me llamo Gregorio. Mi esposa es Jennifer.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
That was Dennis D.T. Thomas was that sax solo.
Awesome.
He started Cool in the Gang with the Bell Brothers and a bunch of other dudes back in the day. By the way, Cool in the Gang goes back like Earth, Wind & Fire, 100 years.
And your celebration was kind of popular.
Oh, they have Grammys. I think you'll find weddings everywhere. 7 American Music Awards. Soul Train. Lifetime Achievement Award. You know, if you've ever seen them, we've played a lot of Cool in the Gang on the show, and quite frankly, quite rightly.
Sort of essential, isn't it?
Well, yeah. DT, as he was known to the group, was, first of all, the wardrobe stylist in the early days.
When I
if you
love
look
that.
At the early pictures of Cool in the Gang.
I mean, my God, that's so awesome. The Guardian said that he was the group's wardrobe stylist and the budget hawk.
Yeah.
Carrying their earnings in a paper bag.
Yeah, carrying their earnings in a paper bag. They started in 64. So, wow.
Right?
They have some miles. Fantastic. And then they became Cool in the Gang in the late 60s. And you'll remember this one because it's unbelievable. And it's the beginning of Pulp Fiction. And what? And if I tee it up, pardon me. It's the screaming and yelling that I love most of all. This part. Vital part of
that
high school.
Is such a great
yeah,
song.
My high school. This was an AM hit that we used to sing on the way to school.
It's a great song.
Tear the Roof Off the Sucker by Parliament. Jungle yeah. Boogie by Cool in the Gang.
I can't believe that his last gig was at the Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah, they played here, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
For real, they played
yeah.
in LA 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was the first live gig back at the Bowl.
A month ago.
Right, a month ago. But the Bowl hadn't been open, of course, for obvious reasons. They opened it, and the Cool and the Gang played there, and played Celebrate
beautiful?
And everything else. So it was
That's
his last
beautiful.
Gig. Of course, he had a family, and you may remember their awesome dance song from Saturday Night Fever as well. And Rocky, there's no escaping Cool in the Gang. They're a part of everyone's life. Like you said, I understand that Celebration song did quite well. They also have many, many moods, which is something that I love about Cool in the Gang. I know we played this one before, but I'm going to play it again anyway because I just love it. And it's this one, Summer Madness, which is an instrumental by them that really goes back to their jazz thing. It's super chill ambient. Perfect for summertime.
Mm-hmm. Right? It's refreshing.
Right? Like a cold, a cooler full of delicious fruits. As good Frida would say, fruity. Unbelievably good. DT. Well,
also, he died peacefully in his sleep, and may that be for, you know, everyone.
Yes, we all seek that. He swirls into the heavens. One has only but to look up to see him with the Perseids, right here and right now. And it's never too late to get into Cool in the Gang. Speaking of Cool in the Gang, let's jump right into Carl Payne here, if you're ready for that one.
Yeah, of course.
Carl Payne was a famous figure in San Francisco.
Was he not? A dear friend of ours was a judge at the cable car bell ringing contest.
R. Debbie Durst.
Yeah, 2 years ago. And Carl Payne was the champion for 10 years.
Yeah, 10 times. Fantastic.
He was just one of those people that was essential to San Francisco, somebody that made San Francisco so special. I remember when I worked in Union Square, and I would go. I would take the cable car when I didn't really have to. I would take it like five blocks.
Yeah, because it's funner.
But you could jump on. Yeah. The guys always had way too much personality. It was awesome.
They also got to wear berets.
Right?
They were the transit people that wore berets and vests.
And they got to kind of, I mean, that was their office. They set the rules. They told you
what no foolishness.
You could and couldn't do.
Yeah.
If you were cool, they would let you just kind of
hang,
coast. Yeah, exactly.
In other words, not pay, but hang on one of the rails. Yeah.
One of the best things that I read about Carl Payne was that he would stop outside of this one guy's house and just pay tribute.
And do the bell?
Yeah.
Because he was an expert bell ringer.
Right. He was that guy. He had the Hyde Street route.
Right. The one that goes from the wharf to downtown.
He worked for the city for 50 years, and the San Francisco Chronicle, Carl Nolte, had a nice story about him in February, which is why, I mean, this guy was so special.
Mm-hmm.
We're celebrating him before, thank goodness.
And he did much more than a...
Yes. In this article, they extol him about that. He was a cable car operator. Then he became a park ranger. He was a police officer.
Wow.
He worked for the city for 50 years.
Oh my God.
And in this article, this man wrote, I think he's one of those people who make San Francisco special.
Hmm.
When I first knew him, the cable cars were in the news. Years of deferred maintenance had taken their toll and the system was falling apart.
Yeah.
Dianne Feinstein, then the mayor,
yes,
got the government to put up money to rebuild the system. And Payne became the public face of the cable cars. He was a veteran gripman. As he said, I have the gift of gab, which is something that, you know, I think San Francisco depends on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
having a big personality. Because everybody gets on that cable car. Like you say, regulars who are going from one place to the other, people who live in the neighborhood, people who are jumping on for a minute, and also zillions of tourists have waited their whole life to get on a cable car and sit outside.
It's just so much fun.
Yeah. You can hang off of them. That's what makes them so fun, you guys.
Yeah.
When they teeter up the hill, you can literally hang off of them.
What I loved was jumping on and jumping off.
Yeah. And on a wooden board.
I would just go to work, and I just thought, I can't believe I'm getting to do this.
It is. It's incredibly romantic, the cable cars. They're really good fun.
In this article, he goes on to say, he could make the brass one-note cable car bell sound like a musical instrument.
Yeah.
He won the annual bell ringing contest 10 times, a record. Once at a civic luncheon, I heard him accompany Tony Bennett in a sing and playing rendition of
I
Left My
Heart. This is crazy bell ringing.
He played the cable car bell at the 49ers Super Bowl.
And the Giants.
Went
I saw
on a
the
world
Giants.
Tour for the city.
Yeah.
He was born in Pittsburgh, joined the Marines, served as a military policeman, then moved to San Francisco in 1962. He said, I thought I'd stay a while.
Wow.
Really? And then he became the very essence of San Francisco. He drove buses for a while, the 30 Stockton, which goes right
Crosstown.
Up, right at the center, to Chinatown. And he said, I like to work with people, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And he then became a police officer when he was older than you would think that he would take that up. He was a police officer in Union Square.
Mm-hmm.
Then he was a park ranger. So he was a ranger in Golden Gate Park. I can't imagine, you know, how much he uplifted San Francisco.
Right. And how much
what
he
a
saw.
Beautiful person, because he
25
really
years as a cop, 20 years on a cable
he
car.
He cared to really...
Yeah.
He said, I'm not giving up, never give up. I learned that my first day in the Marine Corps. And that was when he was 80. That was the beginning of this year.
Wow.
And I have a
Yeah, play some, please. So now I remember when he won 1 year out of the 10, they had him at Candlestick and they had them ring the bell and stuff. And it was really boss, because you'll be impressed, you guys, that it's not just a bell ringing. It's a rhythmic experience.
But also, I mean, it's something that I, what I love about San Francisco is celebrating these guys who take care of.
There's two guys.
Residents, you know.
One guy takes your money, as I recall, or they used to take physical cash. And I'm sure you have a pass now or whatever.
But you did in the 90s, Greg.
I'm from the 60s, Jennifer, the 1860s, when they first went in. So right after the gold rush. There's a giant cable car building where an enormous cable runs under the ground and never stops. And that's
There's a rumble.
Right. It goes. And when they have, say, Gripman, the cars are literally have two clamps that clamp the car onto this giant cable, and that's how they go up and down the hills.
Yeah.
They don't have their own form of locomotion. They're literally dependent on this giant, weird cable, series of cables. It's such a 19th century.
And you get it's such a beautiful way to experience the city. So many great views
on top of the hill. Yeah.
And also, it's profound that he left right as the cable cars came back. The cable cars hadn't been running in San Francisco.
Yeah, because of the
and plague. Carl Payne.
It's really nice.
Here he is.
By the way, to give it even more color, he's playing the bell, which is they've got on a pole, and behind him are the people taking notes, and one of them is wearing a British Beefeater costume, like he's a guard at the Tower of London, because the Sir Francis Drake Hotel, awesomely, as you know, San Francisco claims Sir Francis Drake, and there's many streets named after him in Marin and whatnot, because he landed here in the 16th century.
He landed in West Marin.
Yeah, and begged the Indians for food.
Right. Well, the Indians helped him out before he asked. What I love is Carl Payne's wearing an awesome Giants jacket.
Oh, yeah. No, he's wearing total Giants gear. But there's a guy dressed as basically Sir Francis Drake's beefeater.
And he's just,
because the doorman at the Sir Francis Drake Hotel has to wear that outfit. Everybody else gets to wear a top hat and a derby and a long coat. And he has to wear the knickers. That was him ringing the bell. Also, it does serve a purpose. When you go through the intersections.
By the way, he was 75 there. Does that man look like he was? No. He looks like he's about 50.
Oh, no. He was always way fit and loads of personality. In any case, you jump on the side and go down the hill or up the hill.
You're talking about the cable car, not Carl Payne.
When you got to an intersection, they would clang the bell because there are people crossing the street. There's cars everywhere. It's really crowded.
They kind of rule the road, and that's what's great.
You don't get in front of them and you don't
ride on
the tracks.
Sometimes they just stop where they want to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, no. And I've seen them stop in front of people's houses for those people. I've seen them do get stops of the truck people off. Stop at the top of the hill to let people off.
Apparently, when they very first started, a French man threw flowers out his window.
Wow.
Like people would just give tributes. I mean, it's just such a great, because it's such a hilly
Did you ever live on a flat that was on the tracks?
No.
I remember looking at one once in the 80s that was on Washington, and it was right where it turned on Washington to go down. And you thought, you hear it till when they run till midnight. They cut off at midnight,
like,
is my recollection.
Four blocks away from when.
And but you can hear them coming through the intersection.
It was kind a fantasy for me, because I would really go out of my way to catch it for no, you know, like I could have just walked down the hill, but I wanted to take the cable car for that experience.
When I was a young comedian, the Punchline is down at Bush and, what is it down at, California and Montgomery, whatever. And
I don't know, Greg, you're a comedian starting out. I'm not sure where it is.
This is the 30s. And the club's on Washington and Clay or whatever, Clay and Battery. But two blocks over is California, and the cable car runs all the way downtown to the bottom. So we would do
Sunday. Didn't we take a photo of you?
Yeah, one of my albums, the album The Resistance from 2 years ago. And we based it on Thelonious Monk's Live in San Francisco album and basically stole the idea of him. He's standing on a cable car waving. So we took, you took a picture of me standing on a cable car where they were all parked down the end of California Street, down near 101 California. But it would the cable car ran until midnight and open mic would finish. And I lived over the other side of Franklin or Van Ness, which went right up the hill. The California line only goes one way. California doesn't actually cross town. It crosses town the other way. It was funner to take that back than to take the bus. We were poor, but I think it was only $1.25 or $1.50 even, you know. But and we would jump so on. Sometimes they let you just ride too.
Yeah, they
especially because we'd be the last people on the last ride. And they'd be like, you know, just whatever.
Well, and that was then too, where you know, there was a lot of leeway.
No. More judgment calls. You mean being able to sneak into Candlestick with the same ticket for the whole season? Well, anyway. Mr. Payne is decidedly running things in the afterworld. Not only bell ringing, but being a policeman and a peace officer and a...
Well, I love that...
An awesome ranger.
The Chronicle said, a long life dedicated to the city he loves.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And like everybody else from San Francisco, that's this amazing San Franciscan, not from San Francisco.
Right?
Mm. Like so many and so much. What? Yeah, I did see him at the Giants game ring the cable car bell, and it was super awesome beyond. Hey, speaking of super awesome... Ryan Stiles and I, by the time you hear this, it'll be over, but we can, as Jennifer pointed out, the problem remains. Colin Mockery joined me, Ryan Stiles, Congresswoman Stephanie Murphy, and gubernatorial candidates, former Governor Charlie Crist and current Secretary of Agriculture in Florida, Nikki Fried. We did a bit, a fundraiser called Whose Governor is DeSantis Anyway? We didn't think of that name, but I kind of thought it was catchy. Anyway, it'll have been over by now, but I know we had a lot of people signed up for it. And if you want to carry on giving to get getting rid of Ron DeSantis in Florida, who, as you know, has manhandled this terrible, terrible COVID epidemic by doing everything he could to put more people in danger and fill the hospitals.
Well, it's kind of not over until he's gone.
Well, his public health recommendations and his political stance are wildly dangerous to the body politic. One of the first things you're supposed to do as a public servant is ensure the public health, and he won't do that. He thinks that it makes him a rebel. He fundraises off of it and whatnot. But it gets people killed, and it gets children killed now because we're talking about this element of the Delta virus and all that. We don't have to go into graphic details. Just say there's two very good candidates. No, they haven't decided yet. One of them is likely to be the Democratic candidate in Florida. Right now, they're both going out together with the same message, you guys. You can do an awful lot of good. Last year, Ryan, Colin, me, Dave Foley, and Aisha Tyler did a benefit for Senators Warnock and Ossoff before they were senators in November, and they had to go through two bloody elections. There was a runoff.
And look at what the difference it made. We have the infrastructure bill because we have those two senators.
We secured Georgia and Arizona in the last election.
There's been so much headway.
Yeah. Get up on that. The two senators from Georgia are Democrats. The two senators from Arizona are Democrats. That happened in November, and that all gone into effect in January, you guys. Mm-hmm. That's what really happened. I know that Mike Lindell is excitable, and I know that he holds some awesome rallies, but none of that's happening. This is what's happening. You can go to secure.actblue.com, and it's Ron Begon, whose line, but you can go to ActBlue anyway and donate to the Florida campaigns to try to really change things up. Jennifer and I, because we're America's most annoying couple and LA's 50th most annoying couple, we're not even in the
Surely
Premier.
Surely 250th well, I was gonna say, most annoying.
I don't think we're in the Premier League. I think we're in like the third division as most annoying couple. But we were on an online stop the recall Zoom
As you do.
A call because we want to keep up on things.
In the
things.
Middle of the week. And just, you know, things that you might do.
To all of our California brothers and sisters, it's irrelevant how you feel about Gavin Newsom personally or that you feel that he's somehow not pushed your agenda forward.
You mean if you're not on board with him wanting everyone to be vaccinated, with him giving people a rental moratorium with
and the stimmies,
right?
Plus, you know, throwing money at lots of problems.
What is he not doing?
Well, he didn't stop the wildfires personally, so that hurt my feelings.
I think that might be PG&E.
Right. PG&E has determined that their faulty wiring's been the cause of every fire for the last 30 years, and still, things just move so slowly. Gavin Newsom is on the ballot. I have a sample ballot in my hand. Can hear it. It's made of cardboard and paper. It's very funny and very elementary. It's fun to read. And then when you get to the actual sample ballot part, and this is why we're doing this, September 14th is when the election is, my California friends. You're going to be receiving a ballot in the mail next week, probably, right? Some places are already getting them, for real. Question one on the sample ballot, it says state. Underneath it, shall, yes or no, Gavin Newsom be recalled, removed from the office of governor? And you're to pencil in with a ballpoint pen in black, no.
Thank you. And then mail
that back. The second part of the ballot, don't look at. Look at it on your sample ballot or just give it a glance. It's all the crackpots who are running to recall him. The California election runs. If the governor who's being recalled doesn't get 50%, then the knucklehead who gets the most after him will become governor. We have people, one man, Mr. Cox, brings a bear with him to campaign events that we've learned has cost him tens of thousands of dollars.
A bear. The mayor of Long Beach, Robert Garcia, tweeted about how important this is because if Governor Newsom is recalled...
Oh, no, no.
The health requirements for... health workers to be vaccinated will be null and void.
And he just didn't put that in.
There won't be a ban on. There will be a ban on masks for kids in schools. Mm. It's so dangerous for this to go ahead. We're talking about threats to women's health rights. There's threats to gay marriage.
Oh, abortion! Yeah, everybody. He's done so much, he's trying to take on systemic inequality. Look, it's a giant Leviathan job.
And he's done an awesome job. I can't imagine...
During COVID?
COVID. Wildfires.
Yeah. 45.
Everything. Everything has been thrown at this governor.
Losing his awesome senator to become vice president and then having to appoint another senator.
And Alex Padilla.
Picking Alex Padilla.
Awesome.
Well, the point is this. When you get your ballot, vote no on the first question and then put it back in your envelope and mail it. We're just trying to not let this recall happen, you guys. A Republican governor can give you a Ron DeSantis for reals. The policies will be the same. It'll be that yucky. This isn't a scare tactic or anything. We're talking, as they used to say in Russia, real politic with a K.
Yes.
Meaning last person standing after
I love that this is the... reference.
But, well, you know, that means gutting your opponent. And the one thing that we can do is put the kibosh on these knuckleheads because this is a very serious attempt by a bunch of really evil people to subvert the will of the people. Gavin Newsom was elected in a landslide.
Well,
and there's
no point to remove him.
There's no point to remove him.
Republicans can't win in a fair election. And this is why they're trying to do this. Governor Newsom tweeted, it's about... minimum wage, climate change, abortion access, gun violence prevention, and our ability to fight COVID. It's all on the line. Vote no.
Yeah.
It's please.
It's just no,
you guys. For God's sakes.
For our California buddies, you've got to vote no. Then, you know, you'll have your choice in two more years' time. Believe me, you really don't want Larry Elder. Larry Elder means nothing to you outside of Los Angeles.
You mean you can't get the guy with the bear?
The Cox with the bear. He thinks the bear makes him seem like he's macho or that there's really something happening.
Where are the animal rights activists
right?
on this?
It gives me a Tammany Hall feel, like a real crazy 19th century old camp. You know what I mean? Like someone campaigning in the outback.
That side is in white supremacy 1850.
Oh, full on. We watched a very good program tonight on our Zoom call. about the recall that really put the nail on the head with in regards to the history of white supremacy in this country and how they've literally just reflagged it over and over and over. And the current iteration is the big lie in MAGA 0.3 or whatever, MAGA.
It's but, almost like it's the same lie over and over again.
That slavery was good, that the after the Civil War, slavery and everything needed to be put right back. This whole letting black people into the politics and voting and all that, new. And then when women got the vote, and then when the Civil Rights Act got passed. So have electing Biden and Harris, electing Ossoff and Warnock for that matter.
By the way, can
broke
we just,
them. It broke them.
We need to celebrate the fact that it was, it, today is a year since
I am celebrating.
Biden asked Madam Vice President Kamala Harris to be his vice presidential candidate. And it's, oh my God, I was so excited on the day.
I don't remember that.
And, I mean, I just couldn't believe it. It was like my best, you know, like the dream come true.
Right. A lifetime spent hoping someone that cool and that smart.
When Hillary Clinton wasn't given what she won.
Yeah.
I really, you know, struggled. And to see Madam Vice President Kamala Harris get that position, being the phone call, and I love that because they're both so down to earth, the Zoom call was so kind of
you ready?
Casual.
Ready to get a word?
It was just awesome. Yeah. Just awesome. I also, I love that her husband, Doug Emhoff, is going to be the emissary with the Paralympics to
Isn't
Tokyo.
That boss?
Yeah. I really love that. Mm-hmm. It's just, they're just such a beautiful team.
Yeah.
And it's heartwarming.
He said he was proud of her today.
Oh, well, my God, we're all proud of her. She's just...
She's amazing. I'm just saying that the tone, the change in tone is, is beautiful.
The change of tone.
We see professional, emotional, empathetic, sensitive, adult, responsible people who actually answer for their actions and their behavior and are how their behavior is who they are as opposed to their behavior is this giant, horrible threat to you that is a bluff and then you're never supposed to look behind it because it'll all go to pieces.
Well, it's almost like, I mean, I've waited my entire life for this. We've got a man who spent his life in office. He has acres of longevity in D.C., in Joe Biden. He's gone through so much, and he's come out the
Coolidge administration.
He's right.
Teapot Dome.
But he's come out the other side as this more empathetic person.
Oh, yeah.
And then we have this beautiful but wonky person. She is so hilariously wonky. And by that, I mean, I have all due respect for the fact that she does due diligence with every topic at her disposal that she's put in charge of, and that they trust each other, that they're a team. It's just like my dream team. It's my dream team.
Yeah, it turned
out
that
way. The fact that they have this infrastructure bill that no one can say no to, you know, like they're working things out, but it is going to be something better for America that has been passed since LBJ.
They've already been in the face of this terror and horror and the violent revolution. They've already been better than any other team, I think.
Yes.
I don't think anyone's ever had to face this kind of nonsense that on every front. No, she's fantastico. Beyond any reasonable expectation, I think they've stood as tall as they could. And I think they're going to rally down the Delta virus. I really do. I think we're really, really hoping that the vaccinations get crazy in the South.
It can never be undersold that our vice president's mother came to America to try to solve breast cancer. You're dealing with someone who believes in science. whose first gig was helping her mom in the lab.
I was going to say, hanging around the research lab.
Right? We have people that, and a president who lost a son to cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a team that really wants to get on top of this, who really knows the team in question that is trying to solve COVID. They actually have a personal relationship with these people.
Yes. Which is something you never got before. And it was always supposed to be...
Before? My God.
Yeah. Magically blown away and or incantations or super shots or whatever nonsense. Everything was sort of that sub-childish Star Wars-y level of... Everything was an operation and a thing and a thunderbolt and whatnot. And nothing ever happened. And now they've mobilized... The issue was that a bunch of states really started lagging after spring and didn't press getting their population vaccinated. Some mm-hmm. of them had other issues too, maybe not as much vaccine or whatnot, but the truth is a bunch of states really dropped the flag on it. And this is what the terrible second wave or third wave, whatever we're calling this now, is. That and, of course, the people who keep spreading misinformation and all that.
Well, getting back to infrastructure and what that actually means, you and I have spent time in Mississippi. You have relatives. Your mother was from Mississippi.
Well, I remember never to talk about my mother on this show.
Wow. I remember the last time we were in Mississippi, we were driving around, and we...
I was just making a living playing guitar and bar to bar. I remember.
We turned a corner, and there was like a gaping hole in the road.
Right.
Do you remember this?
Yeah.
There was like a sinkhole of immense dimensions. And this infrastructure bill means so much to rural communities, to states like Mississippi, which is the poorest state. I mean, to be able to just get across town. To have internet mm-hmm. access, because believe it or not, there's parts of America that don't have
internet
access. And it's shocking. And this is what, you know, it's about safe drinking water. It's about improving health care. It's just enormous.
I won't have to panic when I go over rickety bridges in
right?
many parts of the country. The truth is everything's been left to go to hell for the last 50, 60, 70 years because no one wanted to spend anything on it. And the GOP ways to just never spend anything on that. Everything went to defense and lining pockets and thieving and grabbing. And LBJ did it and FDR did it and he's doing it. And that's just take all the money and throw it at all the problems.
But this administration is doing more. I mean,
yeah, it's organized.
The head of the Navajo Nation said day before yesterday about how important this is, like the biggest amount of money given to the indigenous peoples.
Mm.
I think maybe ever.
Right. So how profound
improve.
Is that?
I mean, it's everything. It is literally everything. I couldn't be more excited about what this means to everybody. It's lifting us up, and don't ever, ever sneer at people in those states, Alabama, Mississippi. There's LGBTQ people. There's people of color.
Yeah.
I mean, there's people that, you know, like really, Mississippi has some of the best food I've ever had in my life. And the culture, the music. Louisiana, really? I mean, I wanted to talk about Jazz Fest because it was just canceled, which is just huge that they would cancel Jazz Fest. But also, their mayor is Mayor Cantrell is on it, and she wants to protect people.
Yeah.
We were watching the other night, Governor Bill Edwards was talking about, what did he say? It took his breath away about how many COVID cases they're having.
It's condition red.
Frankly, I thought that they were more on it than a lot of other states mm-hmm. about just quashing a super spreader potential event of a Jazz Fest. But it's so devastating for the musicians in that area. And if you can buy some music, from Louisiana musicians, that would be awesome. The kind of the people that are, would have been playing there. It's for the restaurants, everybody. It's just, it's very difficult, and we love that place.
Well, New Orleans lives on people visiting, and
well, it's all about celebration. It's all about getting together. I mean, Irma Thomas, who is a superstar in New Orleans, she said she was pleading for people to get vaccinated so that we can have Jazz Fest.
They canceled it for the second straight year.
Yes.
What does she say there? Don't be surprised when April rolls around, we may still be dealing with this pandemic.
Yep. I mean, we have to get on top of this so that musicians and...
comedians?
Comedians, yes. I forgot.
Comedians, hello. Comedians, too. Here's one. This Friday at 5 o'clock, there'll be a Proopcast live from the Fortress of Croopitude. Jennifer and I are recording in the salon tonight. It's just off of the augmented wine cellar, which has been turned into, by the way, a rowing club. I don't know if... there's a small shooting gallery as well, small bore freestyle. The film club comes back. Jennifer's curating it again, August 24th at 7 o'clock. The picture starts at 8. Jacques Tati's Monsieur Hulot's Holiday. It's a classic. It's a silent film. It has sound, of course. But Jacques Tati shoots in a very beautiful way. You'll really roar with laughter. August 24th, it's a Tuesday. The neighborhood's pretty hip, and there's lots of groovy restaurants. It's really, really in the heart of Los Feliz. Jennifer and I moved to the... Well, after the fact, I might add, to the hipster part of L.A. We've played all over L.A. Hollywood, Santa Monica, as they say. Hollywood. And West Hollywood. But now we're... And a little bit... Where was that Comedy Central space? That was in East. But now we're finally in Los Feliz. And it feels good, man. It feels like pancakes. You know, when the butter and the syrup get together and it's late. Then I'll be doing stand-up on the 27th right here in the adjacent billiard room. That's at 5 o'clock as well. GregProops.com is where you can find tickets to all these things. Then, let's see, September, I'm going to do a road gig, baby. September 17th at the Pace Center in Parker, Colorado. It's just outside of Denver. It'll be a stand-up set, like an hour and a half. And it's going to be funny as hell. I'm really looking forward to it because I haven't done... stand up live in a giant theater in a million years. Not a million, but I was in permafrost the last time I did a set, and it feels nice to come out into the sun and play for the bipeds. And then who's live? That's Joel Murray, Jeff B. Davis, Ryan Stiles, and me, and our musical director, Bob Durkach. Go back on the road. September 29th, Northampton, Mass., home of the witches. And then Glenside, PA, home of the Submarine Sandwich. And then Montclair, New Jersey. On and on and on. Boston, Medford, right? Then Buffalo, New York. Jennifer points out to me that we're playing Rochester, New York and Rochester, Minnesota in the same tour. We're playing Rochester, Minnesota first. And then I think we play Rochester, New York. We're doing 3 days in Royal Oak, Michigan, Jennifer. What do you make of that?
Well, that's extensive.
You know, before in the before times, we had it on the books for 3 days, and we were all wondering, what makes us so hot in Royal Oak, Michigan?
They just can't get enough of you.
Well, they haven't had any yet, and that's what the thing is. This is like when you go back to the chili bowl, and you're like, oh, cool, there's still some cheese left. We'll be on the road that whole time, and then next year, too. Go to whoslive.com or gregproofs.com and find the Who's Live site. Don't ask me if I'm coming to your town. The answer is yes. We're literally going to everywhere in the next 6 months. And that includes Florida, Ohio, California, Arizona, Texas. Well, how come you're not coming to my town in Texas? Because you don't deserve it anymore. You deserve to be cuffed. Like the whinging cur that you are. October 29th, The Nightmare Before Christmas Live at, how do we pronounce it? The Bonk of California Stadium. Jennifer and I went and recce'd it the other day. It's right next to the Olympic Stadium from 1932. So when you drive in between them, it's great because you get that view from the 32 Olympics, super grand, right? Or if you're a fan of the movie Omega Man with Charlton Heston, you may recall that he drove his motorcycle up the steps of the Colosseum. A million famous things have happened there. And Rose Bowl, blah, blah, blah. What? They played at the Rose Bowl. Danny Elfman will be singing October 29th. We're doing Nightmare Before Christmas Live. We show the movie, and there's a full orchestra under the direction of John Mauchery, who is a mentor, was Leonard Bernstein. That's October 29th, and I'm not supposed to tell you because the tickets haven't gone on sale yet, but another day that's a very special holiday that's quite close to the 29th. Hmm. There might be a show on that night, too. Hmm. So I think I've told you everything that I can tell you. Go to all those shows. Help me. Help me. I think I'm falling in love again. Patricia Hitchcock, ever so briefly, the daughter of Alfred Hitchcock. Alfred Hitchcock, we were just watching. They had a Hitchcock month on TV, and I remember watching Psycho again. Didn't you watch it with me? You mm-hmm. watched part of Psycho with me.
I did. I really love Anthony Perkins in the beginning. When he first sits down with Janet Leigh, I think that that's the best part of the movie.
Oh, it's extraordinary, the writing and the shooting there. There's an earlier scene at the office where our hero works. And Janet Leigh's office in Arizona or whatever, and Pat Hitchcock's the office mate, and she says, "Do you need a tranquilizer?" to her. She has a great line in that. And then her other greatest role is in Strangers on a Train, where she plays
the sister?
Ruth Roman's sister.
Oh, she's wonderful.
And she wears glasses in that role, and you would recognize her in a second if you saw the picture. Anyway, Patricia Hitchcock lived into her 90s and did a lot of other roles as well, and was also on Alfred Hitchcock's TV show. But she's a lovely actress. That's the thing. She's very good mm-hmm. in all of her turns.
Was she? Did she work with Norman Lloyd?
Oh, I don't know. She was in TV movies and with the wife Alma. And Hitchcock's main collaborator was Alma. He mm-hmm. didn't. She doesn't get credit in all his films, but he personally always said that she was kind of in charge of the scripts and how it went and what the vision was, that they basically made films together. She retired from acting to raise her children. She contributed to Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine, if you remember that. Awesome. We used to go to the newsstand and buy Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine, and co-wrote a biography of her mother, Alma Hitchcock, the woman behind the man, right? So she actually wrote a book about her mom being what we were just talking about. She was in a bunch of TV series in the 50s, and of course it's noted here, 10 episodes of Alfred Hitchcock Presents. Anyway, Pat Hitchcock is a lovely presence on screen, and she is flickering off into the stars. Go on.
I wanted to mention that Eve's Bayou is the first film that's part of the Criterion Collection that's by a black woman director, Casey Lemons. It's from 22 years ago. And it stars Samuel Jackson, Lynn Whitfield, Debbie Morgan, Diane Carroll.
It's, am I to understand that it's the first movie put in the Criterion Collection by a black woman director?
Yes.
Is that what you just said?
Yes.
Wow. Well, better late than never, as they say.
2021.
Yeah, move right in on that. Anyway, Casey Lemons has made loads of films since then, including notably a couple years ago, Harriet.
Yes.
The Harriet Tubman picture. And this movie's not easygoing. Eve's Bayou is a beautifully shown and beautifully depicted, but the subject matter is real emotional.
Right. Autobiographical elements for her. It's a real character study, and
people are very human.
Yeah.
It's marvelous, though, and well done. Casey Lemons is an awesome film director. Why, I was just looking over here to see that it's the 50th anniversary this week of Satchel Paige being inducted into the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. One of his daughters, Linda Paige Shelby, was awesomely at the Kansas City Royals. Royals had a big celebration. They've brought the plaque from Cooperstown to Kansas City. It's at the Negro League Museum. They also had it at the ballpark. And Linda Page Shelby was there. You can see there's a picture of her with our friend Bob Kendrick, who's the president of the Negro League Museum, which is in Kansas City. So they had a very big celebration about Satchel Paige. And this show, of course, being a Satchel Paige-based show, there was no way I was letting that go. Because, one, and I won't go on and on forever, Jennifer, but you know and I know that it's all about society. And that's what makes the Negro League such an amazing achievement. Well, Satchel Paige is pretty much the person that the league's fame was built on in a lot of ways, other than the hundreds of other players and thousands of other figures that were awesome. He was the greatest showman and the most famous. And so because of that, he was probably the highest paid athlete in America at a time when people weren't making a lot of money doing sports, the 30s and 40s. And he thought he might be the first person called up when they integrated ball. Because of his enormous fame.
Right.
He had no reason to suspect otherwise, that literally he was the black player that every white fan knew the name of. If they didn't know Josh Gibson or Devil Wells or Cool Papa Bell, they certainly knew Old Satch, right? And he was already Old Satch, right, by then. And in any case...
Speaking of which, I mean, this woman looks far too young, Linda Page Shelby.
Well, he had kids till he was old, Jennifer.
But, I mean, this woman...
I think he had 8 kids with Lahoma.
But
7 or 8.
Awesome that she's there with Bob Kendrick.
Oh, fantastic. Well, she lived in the house, the one that burned down a couple years ago in Kansas City, that he had for ages with Lahoma and all the kids. And they had chickens and, you know, music and the whole thing. He liked to play guitar. And it was kind of a place where I think the whole neighborhood knew, because he was the most famous bloody guy in Kansas City. Also, once he, after his arm blew out and he made his comeback, it was with the Monarchs. And so the rest of the career, even though he barnstormed, the first part of the career is pretty wild and he plays for everybody. Then there's a real Monarch intensive, you know, a couple World Series they win during the war. He's the star pitcher. Hiltner and your buddy Hilton Smith, the other great starter. That, by the way, that staff was astonishing then. So cutting to the chase... Why is it important that he's in the White Hall of Fame? Because he didn't even get to play in white ball until he was 40-something years old. And then he played for Cleveland, first black pitcher in the World Series with the 48 Clevelands. And then he carried on playing in organized ball for 5 more years. So all for Bill Vack. So he faced Mickey Mantle. He faced Ted Williams. He faced all of the great American League players of the 50s and late 40s. And when Ted Williams went into the Hall of Fame in 1966... He wasn't wearing a tie, and he got up, and as usual, Ted Williams was very frank. He was giant and tall and great-looking, and he went, well, I don't see why I haven't given him the ball at Hall of Fame when Satchel Paige and Josh Gibson aren't in the Hall of Fame. He really said that, and then he said it just like that, and then he went, just because they didn't get a chance? So all of a sudden, a meeting was convened, and then...
Well, I was just thinking about that. Now we know that Ted Williams' mother was Mexican-American.
Oh, yes. Uncle Saul. Yeah, Ted Williams on one side is decidedly Latin American. And so within a few years, they decided to put Negro League players in the hall. Satchel Paige was still alive. Josh was long past. And then they were going to segregate them and make it a separate hall that was a separate but equal hall, like everything else in America. Mind you, this is just a few years after the Civil Rights Act passed, so you weren't allowed to have separate but equal anything anymore at that point. So... There was so much hue and cry that baseball folded, and they ended up putting Satchel in. And he had quite a lot of good things to say on the day. He said, I don't feel segregated today. And then he also said, you've turned me from a second-class citizen into a second-class immortal.
Which was extraordinary. Brilliant line.
He was super gracious and happy to be there on the day, and it was a beautiful day. And it led to all of the really great black players being let in. And over the years, they've actually made a huge effort and put in Effa Manley, who owned the Newark Eagles. And, you know, they haven't put in Buck O'Neill, but they put in a lot of players. And then recognizing them this year as a major league was a big move to make after last year, you guys. Major League Baseball is a glacier of whiteness, and to get it to be involved and to understand what this is all about. So anyway, I just wanted to go on about it. He's still in a spirit of joy. Everyone was really happy. Satchel Paige made people happy. That's the most important thing of his legacy, aside from his unbelievable bravery and able to carry on for all of that. playing blackball and having to travel the world and everything. But like Willie Mays, I think crowds were just beside themselves to see him. And that's a real, like, with a comic, with a singer, with a movie star, with whoever, athletes are just like that. Like Simone Biles or Usain mm-hmm. Bolt. Mm-hmm. The whole place is falling apart, all of themselves, because they can't believe they're getting to see something this wild. And I think Satchel Paige had that kind of fun about him and that excitement. He wound up sometimes in a big, over-exaggerated delivery. He kicked his foot over his head. Early in the career, he wrote the word strike on the bottom of his shoe so that the batter saw the word strike. I mean, you know, we're talking showmanship.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, it was the 50th anniversary of Paige going, and may every page be a Satchel Paige that you have to turn.
By the way, Quinn won a gold medal for Canada, the first trans person to win a gold medal in the Olympics.
Awesome.
It's just huge.
With the Canadian women's soccer team.
Yeah, it's just great. And we look forward to the Paralympics. I remember being in London during the Paralympics, and it was just astounding. It's such an awesome event. Biden, I wanted to mention, there have only ever been 11 black women confirmed as federal appeals court judges. Biden just had confirmed Eunice Lee as a U.S. Circuit judge for the Second Circuit. She'll be the only public defender of the 10 sitting judges on that circuit. The only other president who has appointed as many black women to federal appeals court seats was Bill Clinton, but he did it over 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And Biden, this is his first 200
6
days.
6 months!
Yeah. Yeah.
He's got quite a lot done, considering this was supposed to be the Senate that was going to defy him at every turn, and he wasn't going to be able to get anything done.
Well, and he has vowed to nominate a black woman to the Supreme Court.
So, oh, he's going to do that.
You know, his judicial nominees have been 77% women so far.
Yeah, which is a 77% change.
Yeah.
And he's also chose, as you point out, a year ago, a black woman to be his vice president, and that worked out real well. Speaking of working out well, Cuomo's gone. Hooray. The less said about them. And his, by the way, I don't know that he's completely out of trouble by leaving. And the weird 2 week, I give myself 2 weeks leave. Like, you're only going to F things up by staying for two more weeks. Why don't you just stay? And every day we find you in the break room and like, what are you doing? I'm faxing my butt cheeks to, and like, just stop. Stop being here.
Yeah,
just go away.
Go away.
Yeah, go away. Go to Italy.
But look at who we got.
That's where we're going. Go ahead. Kathy Hochul is going to become governor. She's the lieutenant governor, as they say.
Right. She's from Buffalo.
And she'll be the first woman governor of the great state of New York.
The first. It's just astounding. And it's an amazing turn of events. We've got Kathy Hochul as governor. We've got Andrea Stewart-Cousins as lieutenant governor. And the attorney general is Tish James.
Yes, and by the way, Andrea Stewart-Cousins is the state Senate Majority Leader, and she's African-American. So there'll be two African-American women and one white woman, and all three women, much like the state of Michigan.
And what did Kathy Hochul say?
Right. I won't have a toxic working environment like my predecessor.
Yeah.
It's awesome because, one, Andrea Stewart, she is the Senate Majority Leader, is a very hardworking senator in the state of New York, and Kathy Hochul comes from a conservative district where she was the first Democrat in 40 years to win that seat when she won it, and then went on to be lieutenant governor for Cuomo. So sometimes things turn out real nice, like when Al Franken resigned, which he should have, Tina Smith was able mm-hmm. to win the seat of, was appointed to the Senate and then won her seat back, and she's an awesome senator. So I think there's a real upside to all of a sudden changing the face of New York big time for the next 2 years. And if it works out for them, they can run again, and it'll be Bossatopia. I mean, I'm all for that. Haven't we had enough crappy governors and mayors of New York?
Let's put a different spin on that. How enlightened and celebratory and optimistic is it that now we can see three women in positions of power in New York.
Yeah, that's the highlight of the whole ordeal. I'm saying, you know, maybe not lousy governors, but irresponsible and bulldozing. You know, Cuomo styles a Mack truck and Spitzer.
You're focusing tomorrow on DeSantis.
Yes.
Who is the worst.
Well, absolutely delusional.
Abbott, and Tate
dangerous,
Reeves.
Dangerous, yeah. Tate Reeves. Mississippi. Oh, so many. Kemp, Kirstie Noem in South Dakota, Ricketts in Nebraska. There's a lot of kooky Reynolds in Iowa. Then there's the sort of sane ones, Hogan, and I don't know. Isa Hutchinson in Arkansas said he felt bad that there's a school child mask banning. By the way, the state of California is going, everyone in the education system who works at a school, from the custodians to the principals, has to be vaccinated.
Well, I think that's exactly why the Republicans want to screw it up for us here, because we are the largest state and we're going great guns on everything. Gun control, expanding medical care, women's rights, gay mm-hmm. rights.
And getting vaccinated.
And, right. And so they want a recall.
Yeah, but vote now. Speaking of recalls, do you recall? Right?
What?
I'm segueing. Do you recall Jane Withers? Jane Withers was a child actress in the 30s, and she's in loads of Shirley Temple movies. She was a vivacious child actress with loads of personality. And she carried on being in the pictures and on television forever and ever. When we were little kids, she played Josephine the Plumber in a series of ads where she wore white coveralls and a hat. And mm-hmm. she'd come in and she'd be like, well, what you need is Comet. And then she'd pour it in the sink. They'd be like, it would be a couple fulminating, like, I can't believe the sink has this terrible stain. And she'd go, she'd just come into your kitchen and basically take over. And it was great.
She was always Shirley Temple's nemesis.
Yeah, because she was the dark-haired, sassy one. And
She was one of the biggest child stars.
Oh, she was gigantic. This is a great story. Leonard Maltin's blog, he wrote a remembrance of her. And I thought, rather than go into every detail, this was really cute. It's so cute and it's so true. I'm just going to tell one. I'm turning into one of my aunts now, getting ready to tell a story. You know, I heard something the other day, I think.
And, are you going to put plastic covering over soap?
I'm going to require that you eat candy out of a chicken, a glass chicken. And the candy is going to be of suspect age. Generous to, and I don't mean underage, I mean overage candy. Generous to a fault, Jane made friends wherever she went. People responded because she was so dear. When I was going to sign my contract for Giant, I was reading all the fine print, and I said, oh, I can't sign this contract. And they said, why on earth not? And I says, it says you can't take any photographs or movies. And I had taken 16mm and snapshots on every film I'd ever made, even when I did extra work. It would break my heart, especially on this movie. I waited my whole life to work with George Stevens, not to be able to take pictures. And he said, I don't know what Mr. Stevens is going to do. Let me talk to him. So he came back and he was smiling. He said, there's no problem at all. George has it all worked out. And this is the part that is awesome. He had a gold card made for me and it said, Jane Withers, third unit, Giant. And it says, okay, down in the corner, signed George Stevens. Isn't that fantastic?
That's so cute.
George Stevens, he directed The Diary of Anne Frank, The Greatest Story Ever Told, Talk of the Town, Woman of the Year, and took an army unit over and did serious work in World War II. Jane Withers, third unit, Giant.
We saw her at a TCM party.
Mm.
She was pushing Marvin. Oh, I have to look. I can't remember his last name now.
Oh my God! Now I've just blanked on the two. Marvin, right?
Marvin Kaplan. And Marvin Kaplan is unforgettable in Adam's Rib.
Right.
And Katharine Hepburn chose him to be in the scene. He's the court reporter, and nothing was more special than looking over in Hollywood and seeing her push Marvin Kaplan's wheelchair. And they both looked exactly as you remember.
Like they did in the pictures.
You absolutely knew who they were from
and
the
her
1930s
voice, unforgettable.
On. It was just, it's just.
And his voice.
Yeah.
Because Marvin Kaplan talks like this.
So great.
Will you please read that back to the court? Yes. I didn't think so. She said. He said.
Yeah, one of my favorite memories was of him was when we honked and at the intersection, and he was in the wheelchair on Hollywood Boulevard.
I really shouldn't. And I should have let him cross, Jennifer.
Really? No, but it was so cute that he knew that it was for him.
Yeah.
And we were waving at him. Yeah. And it was, you know, it was a couple of years before he swirled on.
Yeah. The TCM Festival has a lot of moments, I think, where the awesome part is watching stars get some love.
Yeah.
Some real, real love.
Yeah, character actors.
And people who still, oh, no, not just, right, not just big, huge stars, but Marvin Kaplan.
Yes.
Oh, my God, well, George Chakiris, and gee whiz, yeah, we've seen so many great, sexy stars there. Speaking of the pictures, you've got something here.
Well, I wanted to just mention that Frank Bowling, the painter,
yes,
who lives in England, he's American, and we've spoken about him before, and his profound, great body of work. He had the retrospective at the Tate. He had a show recently at Hauser & Worth in London. And he's 87 years old.
Oh, my.
And in this interview from last month, it describes him as one of Britain's greatest living abstract painters. He was made an OBE in 2008 for services to art and was knighted in 2020. And
wow, they waited till he was 85 to knight him?
Well, my God, the retrospective that I saw was not that long ago. Yeah. Remember, we talked about how it was so overdue. But what I wanted to read was, not only should you check out his work, Frank Bowling is his name. He wrote, he's 87 years old. They asked him, what drives you on? And he says, I want to get better. I'm always risking things with the old methods and processes. And they said, what ambitions do you still have? I want to make the best painting in the world.
Isn't that awesome?
I mean, how about that?
Yeah.
I mean, he's just, if your 20-year-old self could see you now, what would he think? Wow, is his answer. he's just delightful. And it's so important to go see his work.
Frank Bowling, that's spelled B-O-W-L-I-N-G. There's also a very rare, there's not a lot of black artists from his generation that are famous in England.
His one of his paintings is my screensaver.
Right. That's so beautiful. Frank Bowling is quite alive, and you may enjoy at any, at any time. There's a podcast called Black Diamonds that Bob Kendrick does if you want to learn more about the Negro Leagues. I know I keep plugging shows that aren't mine. I've really got to stop doing that and make us more Proopcast-centric. Join us next time. Thank you very much, Jennifer. May every page that turns
thank
me...
Thank you.
Hooray, hurrah, we're done with the show. And we're going to F off into this good night. May every page that turns Phoebe be such a page. May every bell that rings Phoebe be a cool pop of bell. And if you have to buy bonds, make sure they're Barry bonds. I wish you nothing but love, and I'll see you Friday. People, get ready. It's time to show the world.